Hey, serious privacy enthusiasts. Ready to ace your AI data privacy game?
Oh, you bet, Kay. Dive into the world of TrustArc's Nemity Research, your go-to for staying on top of regulatory developments in AI and privacy.
Seriously, Nemity Research maintains a massive privacy and regulatory database featuring expert guidance and analysis from legal and privacy pros.
So save time on privacy research, cut your compliance timeline, and reduce costs with Nemity Research.
Get your regulatory research and insights at your fingertips with a free trial.
So get ahead in privacy compliance and start that free trial today. Go to trustarc.com/nimity-free-trial.
You're listening to Serious Privacy by TrustArc. Please welcome our hosts, Paul Breitbarth and Kay Royal.
Under the GDPR, the distinction between controllers and processors still plays an important role, as does the accountability principle. But how do you demonstrate compliance on an ongoing basis if you are a cloud service provider and want to ensure that the data of your customers' customers is safe, but also want to be able to show that publicly? Well, GDPR, for that reason, has included the possibility to get codes of conduct and certification mechanisms approved. Right now, the first codes of conduct are on the verge of being adopted, including the EU Cloud Code of Conduct. Today, we'll speak about that cloud code of conduct. What does it entail? How will it work? And what are actually the benefits of adhering voluntarily to a cloud code of conduct? My name is Paul Breitbarth.
And I'm Kay Royal, and welcome to Serious Privacy. So, Paul, I am excited about our topic today. I know typically we don't do one-on-ones with you and I so close together, but we had the unique opportunity to be able to speak about the EU Cloud of Conduct. I'd like to jump on that, have a conversation with you about it. But first, The unexpected question. What do you find irresistible?
What do I find irresistible? Well, this time of year with Easter coming up, I think it would be chocolate Easter eggs.
Nice. Now, any type of gourmet chocolate Easter eggs or just plain chocolate Easter eggs?
No, I prefer if they are dark chocolate. I prefer if they are filled. Obviously, salted caramel is very much for today, but just with a chocolate ganache also works fine. Maybe a praline or something like that. And as long as they're dark, they should be fine.
Nice. You know, I'm going to jump on that bandwagon with you because my lunch, breakfast, dinner for the past week has basically been chocolate. Chocolate, chocolate, and more chocolate. Oh, hold on. Sprinkled in with bags of jelly beans. This is ridiculous.
You're living the healthy life.
You know, I got completely off schedule because my daughter had a baby and I had to watch a 1 and a 2-year-old. So my diet got really, really off track. I am existing on caffeine and chocolate right now. So I thought it was really interesting to see the news story where they fired Christopher Hoff from doing the negotiations from Privacy Shield.
I have not seen that. You surprised me with that.
Yeah, apparently he essentially got into a verbal knockdown dragout about this whole thing about you have to change legislation. And he was insisting, no, we don't. We can talk about that later, but we can move forward with the Privacy Shield. And apparently the European guy got so upset and there was this big hullabaloo and I don't know if he got fired or he quit.
Wow.
And April Fool's to you too.
Thank you, Kay.
You're welcome. If no one else has realized it yet, we are recording on April the 1st.
And boy, did you get me.
He even warned you. I tried to pull off the Paul Harvey, but I couldn't keep it going for long. Let's talk about the EU Code of Conduct.
Yes. So the EU, it's not just the EU Code of Conduct. It is the EU Cloud Code of Conduct.
Exactly.
Because there will be more. The codes of conduct are enshrined in the GDPR, and they are a way for organizations, groups of organizations, to show adherence to the GDPR, to show that they are compliant, and not just by declaring that they are compliant, but also in a verified way.
This is like the first code of conduct that Well, it's not the first one, because there are other codes of conduct out there by other organizations, but this is the first one that was built specifically to be able to qualify as a data transfer mechanism under the GDPR.
So, yes and no. This is the first of two that are currently under consideration by the European Data Protection Board. There have been codes of conduct before under the old regime, so under the Directive 95, but these are the first two, of which the Cloud Code of Conduct is one. I'm not familiar with the details of the others, I just know that there is one. But the Cloud Code of Conduct was specifically designed to demonstrate GDPR compliance. There will be a second phase to this Cloud Code of Conduct, which is an add-on module that will be intended to also be used for international transfers. But okay. I suggest we'll get back to that in a moment, and let's start with the basics. So a basic code of conduct is a means to demonstrate compliance. That's the same with codes of conduct everywhere around the world.
Right.
You adhere to the code, somebody independent verifies whether you have done it properly, and that helps you to actually build trust in your product, in your services, or whatever you do that needs to be verified.
Yes, and it is, if you hadn't caught that already, it is specifically recognized under GDPR that a code of conduct can be in place, but this is the first one under consideration by the European Data Protection Board to be approved.
Yes, this is the first of two that are under consideration, okay. And the expectation is that it will be approved. This has been a lengthy process, because the drafting of the code started some 11 versions ago.
In the works for a while.
It has been in the works for a while, at least for well over a year.
I think I was looking at it sometime in 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's perfectly okay. Possible. And this is a fully private sector initiative, and TrustArc has been a partner of the EU Cloud Code of Conduct from very early on, because we believe that this will help to demonstrate compliance. And as you know, as a company, demonstrating compliance is part of our core business. So this helps. And we believe that codes of conduct do have a role to play in the international privacy community.
I do too.
Yeah. So it was developed by the private sector, by the companies. And if you look at the website of the EU Cloud Code of Conduct, you see other companies like Alibaba Cloud being involved, like IBM being involved, like SAP being involved, and more. Not all names are fully public yet at this time. And the code is also developed in consultation with a lead supervisory authority, like would be the case for any enforcement action, also for codes of conduct and for binding corporate rules. And other compliance instruments, you have a lead supervisory authority. And for the EU Cloud Code of Conduct, that is the Belgian Data Protection Authority. So they have been assessing and providing feedback on the various drafts of the document and made sure to make sure that it is actually GDPR compliant when it is submitted to the Data Protection Board.
Now, to look at the lead supervisory agency under BCRs and under GDPR, companies can choose who their lead supervisory agency is, but of course it has to be based on, you know, where their headquarters is or somewhere logical. They can't just forum shop.
No.
So are you saying the Belgian authority would be the only one for the cloud of conduct, or just they would be able to go to where their headquarters is for the code of conduct as well?
So in this case, it's the Belgian Data Protection Authority, because Scope Europe, that is one of the main initiators of this whole initiative, and that will also act as the monitoring body. They have one of their headquarters in Brussels, and the Brussels office is also taking the lead on the development of this code. So that is why the Belgian DPA would be the lead data protection authority.
The lead regardless. Now, is that going to create any complications with where companies may be headquartered?
No, because in principle, once the code of conduct is approved, it will be opened up for adherence, and any organization, in this case, any cloud service provider, because it is a cloud code of conduct, so any cloud service provider that is willing to adhere to the code and that is able to demonstrate that they are compliant and that they are adhering to all of the controls listed as part of the code, can apply to join the code of conduct.
I like it. Let's dive into exactly what it is. And I'm essentially going to follow mostly the formatting of the published version 11 right now. So they use the terminology out of the GDPR, but they add some.
Mm-hmm.
Of the terminology that they add, which are the ones that you think that are listeners are going to need to pay specific attention to, or essentially they're par for the course, their definitions, move on.
No, I think in this case, it is important to understand because this is not just a copy paste of the GDPR. Otherwise, why draft something new? This is really intended for cloud service providers to demonstrate to their customers that they are meeting the requirements of the GDPR. So no matter where that cloud service provider is located, whether it is a European company or an American company or an African company or an Asian company, that doesn't matter as long as they are a cloud service provider and that they have customers. So it only works in a business-to-business context. This is not a business-to-consumer initiative. It's business-to-business.
In addition, their customers aren't necessarily controllers. They can be as the GDPR allows, they can be a sub-processor to a processor. But what's critical in the code is that they have obligations to their customers.
Yes. Okay. So if you are, as cloud service provider, a processor, you also sign on to probably some stricter interpretation of the rules under the GDPR than you maybe normally would. Although by now, I do think that also many data processors do take that responsibility seriously and are putting in place stringent privacy programs. But yes, absolutely. Also from the code of conduct perspective, the data processor will need to show full adherence to the GDPR. And that would then be the cloud service provider, the customer of the cloud service provider, could also be, again, a data processor. So you could even be a sub-sub processor. But any form of cloud services and cloud computing needs to be involved in the relation for the parties to be able to join the code at all.
Beautiful. Let's start looking down into the structure of the code because it has five separate sections.
Mm-hmm.
And those sections are the scope of it, of course. Data protection, the security requirements, the monitoring and compliance, and then the internal governance. So let's start first with the data protection, and this is section 5. And is there anything in the data protection, rather than just walking through the different sections, that really stands out to you that we need to warn our listeners they need to watch out for?
So from my perspective, not so much, because this is really the part where it is about GDPR compliance. So this is about offering individual rights to end users and to individuals that rely upon the cloud services. This is about putting in place your structured privacy program and to ensuring that the organization actually documents everything in a proper way. Those are the parts that you would find in the data protection section of the code of conduct. So more the operational data protection related elements.
Okay. And there is an associated document that goes along with this. I believe it is called
the controls catalog.
The controls catalog. It's essentially your attestation that you're turning in your documentation of how you meet each of the controls. And they're lined out very well. One of the things that I would like to make sure that our clients or our listeners, whoever, everyone is aware of, is when you are completing this document, you need to make sure that you pay attention to the guidance in the actual controls. Because the specific control may say one thing, but the guidance really gives details as to how you can follow along with that control and what exactly it is they're looking for. And I can give examples in here. As a matter of fact, I think it's in their example. Let me go read their words. They give two different examples. So one of them is there is a requirement, you have to give precise references in your cloud services agreement of exactly how you meet that. So you need to actually copy and paste your clauses and provide the agreement to them. When they are looking for implementing procedures, they want a description of what those procedures are. And then one of the things I really liked, it says it's not good enough to just refer to the procedure and say we have a procedure. You have to give enough information and hopefully provide the document because they want the documents where the documents are required. But it says keep in mind that a documented procedure or policy is expected to indicate its version, its department or personnel responsible for maintaining and signing off on it, and in which cases the procedure or policy is applicable. So it is giving you guidance in here of what it expects your procedures or your policies, however you call them, or your process, whatever it is that implements this, to actually carry all of these elements that we've been telling people they need to have in their policies and procedures for years. It needs to be very detailed. It needs to be documented. And it needs to be very clear.
Yeah, so you need structured privacy management in place. You need a privacy program that you can actually manage on an ongoing basis,
right,
including all your accountability mechanisms and the other ways in which you as an organization are able to demonstrate compliance with the GDPR on that ongoing basis.
So this isn't something you can fake your way through, is no. What I'm trying to make sure people understand. This is something that you're going to have to produce documentation, like getting a certification to ISO 27001 or something along that line.
Yeah, that is for the security part. The security part leans.
But I'm saying the documentation is just like being certified for a standard. You're being certified for this code of conduct.
You are, and there is verification required. But if you look at the security side, and that is the next section of the code, basically the controls to put in place are the ones that you need for ISO 27001. So on top of needing to be GDPR compliant, you basically would also need to be ready to be ISO 27001 certified or be certified already. Of course, if you have your ISO certification, then you're good to go on the security side. If you don't have it yet, at least you need to have your ISO certification file more or less ready before you can adhere to the Cloud Code of Conduct.
Well, they do give options. It says ISO 27001 or similar international standard.
Yes.
So you do have options. You're not required to be ISO certified. But what I do like is that you can build an ISO-based security program based on all the controls in Appendix A, following the guidance in 27002, although they make it very clear that guidance is non-compulsory. All through here, there are disclaimers for that. So as long as you base your security program on these standards, you don't have to be certified. You can also use an alternative, equally stringent standard. Again, you don't have to be certified, but it would be really helpful if you were. And it'd get you most of the way there.
It would save you time if you don't have the money to be ISO 27001 certified. That's also understandable. But then at least your security program should be as good as any ISO certified program. And you mentioned before, you better make sure that you have everything in place because you can't fake your way through it. And that is moreover true because there is a whole monitoring section included as well.
Yes.
And that is where Cloud Code of Conduct and other code of conduct in general are going to be helpful going forward because there is independent oversight outside of the data protection authorities and the courts, which means that if somebody has a complaint about how you as a code of conduct adherent are processing personal data, they can first go to the monitoring body. And the monitoring body can already start their investigation. They can repeal the adherence to the code of conduct, for example, if you are indeed non-compliant. But this is also a way to ensure that that ongoing accountability and ongoing compliance indeed is made through and that it is not just empty statements.
You can't just check the box on this.
Yeah. And that is also where the monitoring body, where Scope Europe comes in, because they review upfront. So when you submit your adherence declaration, they will review, and then they review the full file, so everything that you submit, but they can also review on an ongoing basis.
Right. So there are those random checks that they have the ability to do. Of course, anyone that turns in a complaint can also subject you to another review. This is a serious thing, and I should never assume that our listeners are familiar with codes of conducts or certifications. There are a lot of people that are either new to the profession or that tune in because they like privacy as a topic. So they actually don't deal with privacy as a professional at all. They just actually like data privacy and security. So a code of conduct isn't something to take lightly. And that is why the GDPR actually recognizes it, is because it is as strong as a certification. You are being certified to a code of conduct that you're expected to follow. And yes, I know I'm re-emphasizing that, but I can't tell you how many people I have worked with over the years that think a code of conduct is like when you sign up for a social media account, you're agreeing to their terms of service, and you really have no idea what those terms say. You just say, I agree, and you keep going. This is a little more serious than that.
It is. And for me, the main difference between certification on the one hand and the code of conduct on the other hand is that certification is much more public-facing. It would be much more also towards the consumer, towards the end user, whereas the code of conduct is really the internal operations of the organization. But of course, if you can show, hey, listen, we are company X and we adhere to this cloud code of conduct and we have gone through the motions and we have submitted all the documentations and it has been verified and approved, that of course makes you a much more reliable business partner.
Absolutely. And they do say as you go through your review, they have three levels of compliance that they go through. I've moved us in further down in Section 7, we will make sure that you have this document in the links, that you have it. So on page 26, it has the first level of compliance, which means that you've done your internal review and that you comply. The second level of compliance is when it's supported by independent third-party certificates and audits. This is when someone independent has come in and verified your controls. So first is you do your work. Second, you get an independent body to come verify that your work is correct. They may have to work with you on making sure some things come up to code. That's not, you know, inexplicable. And then the third level of compliance is when you've gone to the cloud service has declared adherent, which you were based on it, and then it goes to the monitoring body and they issue the certificate. Or is that the final level?
That is the final level. So you level two would be partial evidence, and level three would be complete external certifications.
Okay. So the third level of compliance is the same thing as second, but it's fully supported. They say you've cleared it. And then the final level is where the monitoring body is said. Has it made their final decision? Do we have any indication, and I know you've been working closely on this, do we have any indication how long it would be expected that an organization would take to fully go through getting certified by this through this code of conduct?
No, I haven't heard that yet, to be honest, but I would assume that it would easily take a couple of months because all the information...
Early on is faster than later.
I'm not so sure. Maybe. Yes, because there are fewer applications, possibly. No, because everything you do for the first time takes more time.
Get their processes down and what they're looking for and what the common areas that people fail on are. And they might have to issue more guidance if so many entities fail on a particular thing.
Exactly. Okay. So I'm not completely convinced that indeed it will be more speedy from the outset, but that is just wait and see. For now, the Cloud Code of Conduct is still waiting for the final approval from the European Data Protection Board. It is expected that that may be coming sometime in April, which means that then the official launch of the Code of Conduct could follow sometime in May. And more information of that will be made available at a later stage. But it's good to note, because you mentioned at the start of our conversation that the code of conduct would also be usable for international data transfers.
Yes, and they have a specific statement on that. Is that where you're headed?
That is where I'm headed, because yes, the GDPR allows to use codes of conduct and also certifications as a means for international data transfer subject to approval by the European Data Protection Board. For this phase of the code of conduct, that has not been requested. This is just a general code of conduct to demonstrate compliance on an ongoing basis. For the international transfers, the code of conduct team is working on a so-called third country module that will serve as an add-on, because in the light of the Schrems II decision, there it is again, it has become a little more complex to assess third countries.
And they actually say in here, and I love all of the legalism in this, this cracks me up, but if and to the extent not provided differently, e.g. by dedicated modules, this code does not reflect a code of conduct pursuant to Article 46.2E of the GDPR. Consequently, and notwithstanding applicability of and the obligations under this code, customers and CSPs, cloud service providers, who will be transferring customer personal data to a third country outside the EEA stay responsible for their due diligence to assess the individual appropriateness of implemented safeguards according to Chapter 5 of the GDPR.
Yes.
Following the Shrims decision. So there you go. In very, very bright language, it states clearly that you still have to do that full due diligence of individual transfers with each customer. Or the customers actually have to do it with each provider.
Yes, that is correct. And that will probably remain the same under the third country module because those case-by-case assessments are required. But we hope, and now I'm speaking we as in the project team working on that third country module, we hope that we will be able to come up with a standardized set of supplementary measures that also the European Data Protection Board would be willing to sign off on. Whether that will be possible, only time can tell. And the discussions are in the early stages. We are also still in the phase of collecting feedback. We just did a webinar this week as part of that effort. There is a Cloud Code of Conduct webinar every final week of the month, every final Wednesday of the month to discuss the status of that third country module and get feedback from people who are interested. But the idea is indeed that for either all countries or maybe just for a restricted set of countries, we will be able to come up with a set list of safeguards that then can be written into the code of conduct. And if they are implemented by the cloud service providers and the European Data Protection Board would be agreeable to those safeguards, it would mean that if the cloud service provider has the code of conduct, including the third country module, that you are much more likely to be able to transfer personal data to them than in other situations.
I like that. Given TrustArc's experience with certifications and validations, it would be expected that, of course, we would be one of these independent third bodies that would be able to verify that the cloud service providers have these controls in place and then pass it along to the monitoring body.
Yes, that is at least the hope that we will be able to do that. It is the intention.
Okay, so that would be good. And then let's go through two other questions. I have three questions. I don't know. I have tons of questions for you, Paul. What is the penalty if you are certified and then you fail to adhere?
Well, the final penalty is, of course, that you can no longer be part of the code.
That's like being kicked out of Jedi camp.
Yeah, or being fired or not being reelected, something like that. Of course, it all depends on the severity of the noncompliance. It could be that you just missed a deadline, which is less serious than if suddenly your security program isn't up to standards anymore. So it could be a reprimand, could be non-public, could be public, including the reasoning. It could be a temporary or permanent revocation of the verification of compliance. It could be for some services. It could be for all of your services. And indeed, in the end, it could also be the end of your membership, either for a while or indefinitely.
If that happens, that could also mean that the data protection authorities in Europe might stand up and pay attention. If you get kicked out of the code or you're publicly reprimanded, that's kind of like all the regulators jump on the bandwagon, right? Ooh, fresh meat.
Yes, unless you have a lead DPA in Europe, then you still have only the one that can jump on the bandwagon. But yes, of course, I mean, that will certainly be a trigger for data protection authorities to take a closer look at your operations.
And that's not unexpected. I mean, that happens nowadays. If a company makes news with something that happens or whatever, regulators all over the world, if your company does business in their region, stand up and pay attention.
Well, they should. That's their work.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't have to be a complaint made directly to the authority. As always, like with any other type of expected behavior, if you make news, regulators are going to pay attention. I also wanted to ask you, you've been working with this mm-hmm. for the years that it's been in process. I mean, clearly we're on version 11. Give me some inside knowledge there of what it's been like to go through this process.
Well, you know, most of those conversations are confidential because everybody needs to be able to speak out freely.
Yes, I know.
And as really in the nitty-gritty deals, it is the choice of words. It is where you put a comma, whether or not to include certain references or not. Yes or no.
It's not the overall sections. that were such an issue. It's the devil in the details kind of thing.
The devil is always in the detail. Yeah, I mean,
that sounds logical.
Well, first of all, the question is, of course, what should be in this code for it to be successful? That is another question we are asking ourselves now when looking at this third country module. What should be included? Because you cannot redo everything that is already in the basic code. We are building on the basic code. So you cannot just say, oh yeah, but all those basic GDPR elements have to be met. No, that is assumed, because if you want to adhere to the third country
module,
you need to adhere to the general clouds. Otherwise, the third country module wouldn't make sense. So what do you repeat and what don't you repeat? It is about definitions.
Oh, I like that.
Do we need to come up with a definition on what we consider is an international data transfer for the purposes of this code of conduct? Or do we wait and hope that maybe the European Data Protection Board will come up with one after all?
And then even if they do or you do, one, I would assume you might have to change your definition to match theirs if they do, even if it's sometime in the future. So it's not like this is set in stone. This will have to grow and expand or modify as however the GDPR or guidance might go in that, because it is specifically based on GDPR and European law. This is not like some of the code of conducts out there that are based on a particular industry or something, to where it's not based on any particular one region's law. It is trying to be an accumulation of all the laws to hold to a high standard. But this is based specifically on the GDPR, and so it will have to grow and morph with the guidance that comes out of that.
Yes, that is correct. It is really based on the GDPR. That is the main focus. And
where does UK GDPR fit in here? Does it?
It doesn't for the moment. Originally, it was an initiative that would also cover the UK. There is discussion whether or not this code of conduct could also be submitted to the UK authorities to be recognized as an EU GDPR code of conduct.
And then last question for you. So we know that there are cloud service providers who are currently undergoing investigation, some of them public because early decisions have been made already, some of them not so public because they're still being investigated. Is this something that, when fully adopted, a regulator might be able to say, you have to go meet the EU cloud code of conduct as part of your settlement or part of your agreement?
I think what may happen is that regulators say, well, if you adhere to a code, it gives us more confidence that you are indeed a compliant organization.
Okay.
Because there is a different form of independent oversight already taking place. I would say this is really about software as a service, platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, and that cloud service providers who offer either of these three are able to show that they are compliant with the code of conduct and thus fully compliant with the GDPR, and on top of that have a state-of-the-art data security program in place.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, and we can close out with this, but that's one of the things that I really like about this code of conduct. It is a full program initiative. For those companies that want to seek certification to this cloud code of conduct, it's really going to be a sophisticated and holistic program for them to step up the maturity of their own program if they're not already there.
Yeah, that's true. And if you say, are there other benefits of adhering to a code of conduct on top of being able to demonstrate compliance in a good way, there are actually some more. There may be a bit more hidden in the GDPR, but if you look, for example, at organizations under investigation by a data protection authority, the adherence to a code of conduct needs to be considered if and to the extent that administrative fines will be determined. So if you adhere to a code, it could be a mitigating factor. It could also be a factor that makes your fine more serious if you have breached also the code. So the example that you gave before, if you are publicly reprimanded or kicked out of the General Assembly, that might mean that also the impact of your fine will be higher. A code of conduct is also seen as a risk mitigator as part of your impact assessments, because it shows that you have a good program going on and that you have proper documentation going on. So from that perspective, I would say it is much more beneficial than just getting a stamp of approval on your privacy program.
Absolutely. Like here in the U.S., Office of Civil Rights came out and said if you follow a specific cybersecurity standard, then that can be taken into account as a mitigation factor if you're being investigated, because it shows that you're trying to do the right thing, just something went wrong, not that you're not paying attention. And I like that because working with a lot of companies in building their program or maturing their program is they have policies. They just might not be documented. This forces you to document them. And as we have said before, consistency breeds compliance and compliance breeds trust. So you really need that consistency, and you're not going to get it unless you have documented processes and procedures that everyone knows where they are. It's kind of like Cheers. Everyone knows your name and they say hello. You need to be friends with all your documentation.
Amen. And with that preach, we come to the end of yet another episode of Serious Privacy. If you like our series, please rate and review us in your favorite podcast application. We do take note of your reviews and your suggestions and are currently discussing those as well for future episodes of our series. If you want to reach out to us...
Hold on, Paul. Let's say thank you to those that went and wrote comments and reviews. Oh my gosh, we absolutely love them. Those are fantastic.
Absolutely. And if you do want to contribute in other ways, feel free to reach out to us via seriousprivacy@trustark.com or via Twitter. You'll find Kay as Heart of Privacy and myself as your old Paul B and the podcast at Podcast Privacy. For now, thank you for listening. Until our next episode, goodbye.
Bye, y'all.
That was Serious Privacy.
Hey listeners, looking to navigate the realm of responsible AI data privacy governance? Well, look no further.
Absolutely. TrustArc is paving the way, offering a complete approach to managing privacy risks in the world of AI.
TrustArc allows organizations to confidently use AI with personal or sensitive data, moving forward efficiently and cost-effectively.
And here's the kicker. Protect your company and data with TrustArc's privacy-driven compliance software.
Because their deep automation streamlines data privacy governance, cutting your time to compliance with automated data mapping, risk assessments, and regulatory reporting.
TrustArc's enhancements go way beyond that, helping organizations understand AI better and align cross-functionally on data governance, privacy, and security.
Plus, they provide guidance on privacy governance for AI and how to mitigate risks using frameworks like NIST AI, OECD AI, and the NIMACY Privacy Management Accountability Framework.
If you're aiming for compliance excellence, check out Privacy Central, seriously one of my best parts. It uses automation and privacy expertise to understand your requirements, build and manage your privacy program with ease.
Oh, I agree. Privacy Central is your go-to to measure your progress toward responsible AI data compliance.
Stay ahead with TrustArc's Privacy Central. Visit TrustArc.com now. Ask me and Paul if you have any questions.